Mix.
Part of the show, emailing us rad@radradio.com like Matt did. We're gonna get to email his email in just a second. Call us anytime, 888-989-9811. Us being myself and Steve Mickelson, live from Las Vegas, Nevada, and mixpicks.com. 2K's and mix, 2K's and picks, mixpicks.com. Hello, Steve.
Good morning.
So you're sporting the Michigan gear today. That's good. We've got Matt's email that came in early this morning. Says the A's win again. Like you, Rob, I'm a fan of the A's, but I have grown tired of the Coliseum BS and the owner. What I don't understand is I live more than 2 hours away from being able to see the game live and in person, so I wanted to see the game on TV. And despite every medium, even MLB.TV, I couldn't see them. Last night, the Giants game was over as the A's started. The wife and I wanted to chill and watch some more baseball as we got to go to bed early. Why the blank can't I watch the game in Sacramento? Matt, I will cover what I can of this. I don't know. I don't know what cable service you have. I was able to watch the A's last night. I was watching on NBCS. That's NBC Sports Network, at NBC Bay Area, they call it. I have DirecTV at home, and it was on, I think this part I can't be quoted on, I think it was on 698, because the NBC Sports Bay Area channel started at 694, and then they have all the alternate channels. It also depends on how you're getting your cable. And I don't have DirecTV at the studio here, so I couldn't double check. But you can get the A's games on Fubo, on ESPN Plus, if you have any of those. So I'm not sure they weren't. I don't know about blacking out. I do know I was awake, I was alive, and I was sober, and I was watching the A's last night. So I was able to get it in the Sacramento area. So hopefully you can look into some of those things if you want that option. We did talk about the A's yesterday for a couple reasons. We're watching their attendance. They played last night on a Tuesday against the Pirates, and they got more than they got on a Monday. They got they had 3,876 people watch. Still miserable and understandable, but the A's won again. Now, I know the Pirates are nothing, Steve, but you got to let us A's fans have a little fun here while we're doing way better than anybody predicted. I have to go actually find my A's gear so I can start wearing it when we do the show more often while I have a few days here. They have won. The A's have won three in a row. They've won six out of the last 10. They're in third place, 3.5 games behind the Mariners. I don't for a second believe the A's are going anywhere. I'm not making that case. But there's a reason to have a little bit of fun watching them. I like I said yesterday, they've got a lot of young talent that we know they're going to trade away to the Yankees and the Red Sox come the trade deadline. There's that to look forward to.
A's have twice the amount of wins you would have thought they would have had at this point. They're sitting at 14 and 17. If you would have polled people, they would have said they'd have been at about 7 and 24 at this point in the season. They're in third place. They're ahead of the Angels. They're ahead of the Astros. They're playing good baseball. Their bullpen has been really good. Last night, J.J. Bleday, a couple of home runs. They're looking for the sweep against the Pirates today. If they weren't leaving, I think some people would be optimistic about the A's for this season because they are exceeding everyone's expectations. But then you add in the fact that they are leaving at the end of the year, and it just kind of, but who really cares?
Yeah, and Billy Bean ain't walking through that door. They're not actually playing Moneyball right now. They're playing, we're not paying anybody, and we're just getting lucky. You know, we still have a bunch of holdovers in the farm system, things like that, basically. And there's no case to be made for, you know, wow, if the A's keep playing like this, they're going to actually trade for some talent and put together a run. No, they're not. That's not how it's going to work. So as you mentioned, Steve, the A's, they have a day game today to go for the sweep against the Pirates. Speaking of sweeps, the American League East, again, way early. Hard to make a case for this mattering much, but you made the case for the whole, look, I'm making a point here thing. Yesterday, the Orioles and the Yankees, they are going at it in the AL East. The Orioles won again, 4-2 yesterday. They are going for the sweep today against the Yankees. They've now got a full one-game lead. Yes, it's a homestand. They've been at home. Impressive by the Orioles or just, good job. It's only May.
No, I like it because I think this sends a statement. They have their ace in Corbin Burns going tonight against Lewis Gill for the Yankees. A sweep here would kind of set a tone early on. Look, Yankees, we're here. We're for real. And we think we can match up and we're not intimidated by you. On the other hand, though, Aaron Judge has to get going for the Yankees. He's too good of a ball player. He's been slumping early. Right now, Soto's been carrying the team. Volpe, their second-year shortstop, has played really well. The Yankees will be there, but it's a nice statement, especially for Orioles fans, if they can complete a sweep here and, you know, make the Yankees a little bit uneasy.
You mentioned, first of all, I wanted to congratulate Aaron Judge. He has been struggling. It's been a couple weeks since we looked, but hey, he's over 200 for batting average, up to 207. Look, I don't hate the Yankees. In fact, I like the Yankees. I'm an A's fan, but Yankees are kind of, they're close to that 1B position for me. Been to a couple Yankees games, took my wife to her first live baseball game years ago when we were in New York. She has an Aaron Judge jersey. But the thing I like, quote, quote, as a fan about the story is, Yankee fans will overreact to this. If the Yankees get swept by the Orioles, Yankee fans will start waving that fist going, don't you have to, you have to do something. And they'll go back. I mean, they've already booed Aaron Judge out of New York a couple times, which he said, you're right, I suck, I'll get better. So that's where it matters. And it is, the Orioles, you know, have had a rough, five decades off and on with a few little glimmers of hope there when Ripken was around, but they've never put it together for it since, I mean, like, since like old men like you and I remember. And so it does matter that a team that's trying to reestablish itself as a major player, because the Orioles did matter for a while, to go into New York even early in the season, or not go into New York, but to bring on New York and to sweep them would make a statement for both sides.
Yeah, the Orioles, when we were growing up, were a powerhouse with Earl Weaver. It was pitching and defense, the Jim Palmers, Brooke Robinsons, etc.
Eddie Murray.
Eddie Murray, steady Eddie. But this Orioles team is really good. They're young. I'm really hoping, even though I'm a Red Sox fan, I just love good baseball. And I'm hoping the Orioles can keep this nucleus together with Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson. They got, Holiday came up, didn't look good at all, sent him down. I think he went 3-for-5 last night in a minor league game. Colton Cowser has stepped into center field. He's hitting a little over 300. He's another top prospect. They got another outfielder, I don't even know how to say his last name, but they have really good young talent coming up. And if they can keep that nucleus together, this is a team that's going to be a thorn in the side for several years for the Yankees.
So what are we at, 13 years with this guy? For more than a decade, you know, the thing about Mike Trout has been, at various times, he's the best player in the game, but he's sidelined by the fact that he's with the Angels, where the Angels can't put it together, et cetera. I'm starting to wonder if we need to rewrite the book a little bit on Trout. Sure, the Angels have not been much of a help over the course of his whole career, but he's hurt again. The outfielder for the Los Angeles Aiders, Angels, three-time MVP. In 2021, torn calf muscle, he played only 36 games. The year after that, 22, he played 119 games, although a back injury put him on the DL for a while. Sorry, they call it the injured list now. Last season, he had a hand injury, and so he only played half the games, 82 games. In 2021 to 2023, in those three seasons, he missed 249 games. That's more than half of the possible games he could play, and now he will miss more time. He has torn his meniscus in his left knee. He's going to undergo surgery. He's out indefinitely. Not believed to be a season-ending injury, but he could be out all the way into late summer. And I'm starting to not feel bad for Mike Trout, and I don't know if that's fair or not, because I really have kind of felt like, what a waste of talent, and he seems like a decent guy. I don't have a lot of info on him. But now I'm starting to think he's more like that, he's just a China doll, injury-prone thing, which doesn't mean I don't feel bad for him that he keeps getting hurt, but gee whiz.
One of the things that I always use as my gauge for whether or not I feel sorry for an athlete is Mike Trout chose to sign that long-term free agent contract. I think he signed for $450 million. It's hard to feel sorry for him being stuck there with no chance of making the playoffs when he didn't make the playoffs prior. He signed that long-term contract to keep him basically an Angel for the rest of his career. He knew what he was getting into, so I don't feel sorry for him at all. His career, though, right now, you got to start wondering, as you said, the China doll. I mean, every single year he's getting hurt. Early reports are he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, but they're not going to know. I think he has surgery scheduled for Friday. Once they get in there, they'll find out. I mean, he could be out for the rest of the year. And even if he's out to late August, early September, If the Angels are out of it, why are you going to rush him back? And it's just kind of a shame because he was such a dominant player in baseball. He was the best player in baseball until Ohtani took that over. But I can't feel sorry for him because he's the one who chose the contract. They wanted him in Philadelphia. He chose not to go there. That is his hometown. So, you know, he gets what he signed for.
Meanwhile, a lot of people are talking about Cincinnati Reds shortstop Elly De La Cruz. This went viral the last 48 hours or so during the Reds' 5-2 win over the San Diego Padres on Monday. There are claims, which we'll explain, that he may have thrown a baseball harder than anyone has in a Major League Baseball game. Remember, he plays shortstop, but StatCast says they clocked a ninth-inning throw of his from short to first at 106.9 miles per hour. Some people even think he was trying to throw it super hard, and that's why it flew over the first baseman's head. It was an error. I mean, it's not like it was a pinpoint throw. And it kept the Padres' hopes alive. Ultimately, that didn't go anywhere. The stats only been tracked since 2015. But there's a couple things, Steve. First of all, I've heard a few people in sports media go, yeah, right, okay. I mean, the clock, we don't know. We don't really know. It's 106.9. So that's one thing. I wanted to know where you fell on that. And then the other thing that's even more interesting is, it's not a small conversation. I went to some local Cincinnati media and saw a few sports columnists online who were writing about, hey, with the state of baseball and pitching today, it's all about one thing. We've talked about it, velocity and spin. Well, he's got the velocity. Should the Reds be talking about, does De La Cruz have a spot in the pitching staff as a closer or something? I mean, what do you make of, first, do you think he threw at 107 miles an hour? And then, is this just ridiculous to talk about making him a pitcher too?
I would believe that he did throw at 107 miles an hour. This guy has a cannon. If you remember growing up, and I'm going back more old school, Sean Dunstan with the Cubs used to just really bring it. And I feel for that first baseman. I mean, think about it. You got a guy throwing 107 miles an hour at you, and you got to catch it in your glove in the web because you don't want to catch it in the palm because it'll make your hand numb for four innings. But De La Cruz is such an interesting young talent to me. If you remember when he came up, and I might've been his first home run or one of his first home runs, I think he hit like a 480-foot home run. So he has substantial power for this guy. He is also one of the fastest guys in baseball. I think they have him running bases as one of the fastest times ever, you know, in the short time he's been up there. So he can steal bases. He hits for power. He's got an unbelievable arm. Yes, I know that intrigue about making him a pitcher, but right now, if you can just harness this talent, he is going to be an exceptional baseball player. I don't know if shortstop's his ending position. I think he'll probably end up moving over to third, but he is talented beyond belief. And I just hope they're able to, you know, dial it in and hone his skills because he will be a superstar if they're ever able to get him online.
You know, it's funny you bring that up too, because it's not like, and I don't know who, I couldn't tell in the footage and I didn't look it up. I don't know if it was Strand who was playing at first, but I'm sure it's not the first throw that he's taken from De La Cruz. But you can almost tell that he knows it's coming. And even if he didn't, like if it was first day on the job, the minute that De La Cruz lets go of it, you know, it's a high, hard one. And as you watch the clip more and more, it is an overthrown ball, but De La Cruz didn't airmail it. And you can see the first baseman is making an attempt to do exactly what you said, get it in the webbing. And so it goes off the tip of his glove. And could he have gotten it with a stretch? I don't know. But it looks to me like he's doing a little head turn thing as well. And that, look, if you haven't played, that's a fast ball that's coming at you.
And I think this is goes into because he doesn't really jump off the bag. If it's a normal throw, I think he jumps, comes off the bag, hopes he gets back down in time. But when you're jumping, you don't control how high you're going to go. And like I said, if he takes that off the palm, or think about it, he jumps too high and he takes it off the wrist right below the glove, which we've all taken that one. He's out for the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's gone. So I think there was some hesitation from that first baseman on that throw. Yeah. You know what? Let it go. We'll live to play tomorrow.
Yeah, understandable hesitation. We got a brawl last night between the Rays and the Brewers. It was the eighth inning. Jose Siri grounded out against Brewers pitcher Abner Uribe leading off the inning. Uribe and Siri exchange words, and that's near first base. Things quickly become heated. an umpire gets between the two, and pretty soon Uribe throws a punch at Siri, and then, yeah, here comes everybody out of the benches, etc. Now, Siri claimed that Uribe escalated the exchange with a shoulder bump. Uribe said it began with some unnecessary words from Siri. It actually began between Siri and the Brewers when he took a long look at his solo home run in the third inning. And then when he came up in the sixth, Peralta, who he gave up the home run, drilled him. So Peralta's gone, manager's gone. This is old school baseball, Steve. I mean, you and I grew up with the old, all right, you're going to hit a home run and showboat. We're going to plunk either you or the next guy. You know, it was always that, will they just plunk the next batter or will they plunk this guy when he comes up later thing. And they've been trying to legislate this out of the game a little bit, like the rule of we're not only going to throw the pitcher out, we're going to throw the manager out, things like this. I don't know the extent to which you're ever going to get rid of this in baseball, like fighting in hockey and things like that. Occasionally, I still like to see a little bit of testosterone. And the thing about baseball fights, too, as I watch the video, if you're watching this on Rat TV, is baseball players are the worst. If you're not Nolan Ryan, you don't know how to fight on the field. They don't land these punches. They're just swinging around. They look like, no offense, like a girl fight back in the 80s sort of thing. But does this offend you? Does this bother you? Is it like, oh, come on? Or is it like, eh, let boys be boys now and then?
I think my issue with it is, and I had it on TV, but I didn't actually see it with volume, goes to, and this is what you said, he hit the home run, slow walked it, yeah, but then he got drilled on the next at bat. To me, it's over. That's it. There's right. No more retaliation. Look, we settled it. We made our statement. You shouldn't be doing that, and it's over. The fact that it continues bothers me. And again, I'm with you with, you know, let them play, but you shouldn't have taken it to that next step. You shouldn't have, and you see it, and Uribe's talking to him. He gets the out. The guy was halfway up the line, but you can see Uribe saying something to him. Mm-hmm. You don't know if Siri was saying anything, but I mean, he turns his head and is still jawing at him. I get it. I do. You know, the fights in baseball are always a joke. Most all of them. You know, you reference Nolan Ryan to Robin Ventura, and that's one of the best ones ever. Put him in a headlock and just start wailing on the guy, which was incredible. But to me, it should have been over once they drilled him. That's it. We told you and move on.
All right. I alluded to hockey. Let's start. We may have to take a break in the middle of it because we got this email, rad@radradio.com. I don't know the background on this, but Daniel wrote in. He's an all-Boston sports fan. He self-identifies. He says, as an all-Boston sports fan, I'm curious about Steve's thoughts on Brad Marchand from the Bruins. I have never met anyone who is a fan of him unless they were a Bruins fan first. He seems to be one of those guys you hate unless he's on your team kind of guy. Is that his rep?
Exactly. Okay. He's the Draymond Green. He's the Dennis Rodman. If he's on your team, you love him. He's always willing to be that instigator. And he gets away with a lot with, you know, little stick jabs and various things that you know, maybe other players might get called for a penalty. But he plays hard nose. He's scored over 400 goals, you know, in his career. He's a great player. But he's just that guy that is that irritant on the other team that unless you're a Bruins fan, you don't like him because he's good. They win. He's a major part of that. But he just continues to be that little irritant to all the other teams. So, yeah, fans don't like him at all unless you're in Boston.
Speaking of Boston, they had a chance last night to close out Toronto, which you and your sportsbook friends really want to see Toronto disappear. But they went into overtime, and Toronto took it. So that series remains Boston up 3-2, but they're heading back to Toronto. Are you starting to get nervous, Mr. Sportsbook?
I'm always nervous when that team's still on the board. I was hoping they'd close it out in five. You're going back to Toronto. Toronto's going to be a slight favorite in this game. You know, and then if they win in Toronto, and they should because home ice is mm-hmm. big in hockey, you're going back to a game seven. So now I'm to a toss-up. Another 3-1 collapse by the Bruins, though, would just crush me. But I cling to Boston historically against the Maple Leafs. I think they're 7-0 in series since, like, the late 60s, if I'm correct. Don't hold it to me. But I hope they can keep that trend going and don't let the Maple Leafs back in this.
That'll be, by the way, the only NHL game tomorrow night, Boston at Toronto, 5 o'clock Pacific time. Also, last night, Steve told us to look out for Nashville, sure enough. They did not go down yet to Vancouver. Vancouver's still up 3-2. Do you like Nashville long run? I know yesterday you were saying, yeah, I kind of like that. Do you think they've got a shot at turning the series in their favor ultimately?
I think they could, just because of the goalie situation with Vancouver. Do I think they'll advance past the next round? No, I think it's a one and done if they win this series. But by the Canucks losing their goalie, their top two goalies, you know, it opens it up. Most teams can't compete with a third string goalie. Vancouver's hanging tough. And it's been a really good series.
Carolina and Winnipeg, and Colorado. Colorado did it over Winnipeg, wrapped up their series. They're moving on. Let's get to tonight. We'll go late game first. Any chance the Los Angeles Kings pull a Nashville or pull a Toronto here? They're down 3-1 to Edmonton. Any chance on the road LA stays in this, or do you see this one ending?
I don't think, even if they win this, I just can't see LA winning this series. They played a near flawless game in their last game. They outshot the Oilers, you know, by a lot. They made one mistake. They got a penalty. Oilers capitalized, power play goal, final 1-0 Oilers. I just don't see the Kings playing really a better game than they have their last couple of games, and they're down 3-1. So it's a good series. It's a more physical, slower hockey. I give the Oilers credit because Skinner's playing great goal. But the Oilers in the past have always been a really aggressive team, willing to make mistakes, which at times has cost them. And the Oilers in this series are pretty much saying, okay, this is where LA wants to play. We'll sit back. We'll just wear them down. We're not going to get too aggressive and open up holes for the Kings to take advantage of. And we're going to rely on our power play. They scored 8 goals, I believe, in power plays in this series. And they're just sitting back saying, we'll take everything away from the Kings. We'll wait for them to make the mistake. So I've really liked the Oilers and their disciplined hockey in this series.
So the big one isn't even the deciding game. The big one is the early game, 4:30 on ESPN. It is the almighty Game 5 that you always talk about, Steve. I mean, how important is it now more than ever? Your 1A team, you're a Red Wings guy, but you're a Vegas guy. So there they are, the Vegas Golden Knights. They're tied 2-2 in the series. They are at Dallas tonight. How are you feeling here on game day?
Not good at all. As far as we're a $1.55 favorite in here, the Knights have struggled on the road all season long. Do I realistically believe they can win the first 3 games in Dallas? Yeah, I'm not leaning there. I just, Dallas is the better team on the ice right now, and they really need to win. Game 5s are so important in this series, and I think the Stars get it done tonight.
As we said yesterday, Vegas has to win in Dallas one way or another, whether it's tonight. If they're going to win the series, it's either got to be tonight or in Game 7. Because they win tonight, okay, they've won in Dallas, and then they can go home to Vegas on Friday and they can close it out. They don't win, it's a survival game on Friday night in Vegas. Then they still got to go to Dallas and win. So they've got to figure this out and get a road win.
Yeah, and for the Knights, you got to get out early. You have to get up. You got to hope you hold on. Dallas, though, isn't afraid of being a little bit behind. They have confidence in their team. They can come back. I don't see the Knights coming back. Knights got to score the first goal, and they got to stay. You know, if they tie it 1-1, the Knights have to score a goal, too. They just have to stay out front. Because if they get down 1-0, 2-1, I just don't think they're going
to
do it.
All right, so we had a few NHL teams who were down 3-1. They found a way to stay in their series as is. Same thing in the NBA. We'll get to the NBA playoffs after this.
Knicks Picks, the Knicks Picks Sports Show. Let's
go! We had 3 NBA games last night, Steve, as we work our way through the playoffs. 2 of the teams were up against the wall. They were dead. They were buried. Nobody gave them a shot. And then Sixers guard Tyrese Maxey decided to say, hey, wait a minute, what about me? I'm going to score 7 points in less than 30 seconds of regulation as we go into overtime. Hit back-to-back threes. He erased a 6-point lead inside the final 30 seconds. Like, he alone did that. It was extraordinary to watch. It's worth YouTubing if you didn't see it. It's that exciting. They get into overtime, and the Sixers get a 112-106 overtime victory. They send the series back to Philadelphia, which is basically, if we're going to go back to the last game that was in Philly, a home game for the Knicks. Meanwhile, Bogdanović is out for the Knicks. So, a couple things that are in there, Steve. The Sixers, we've been using very, I used a very like morbid analogy yesterday because I couldn't think of a better one. That pet that you just can't let go of and is clinging to life, and it's like, is that where the Sixers are? And then they go out last night and they win on the back of Maxey. And you've got the Knicks as maybe the team, and we'll get to the Celtics in a minute because there's trouble in River City there. That maybe the team that could go for the East. I don't know how big the Bogdanovich injury is to you, Steve, but do the Sixers have a legit shot? Did they put fire in themselves here? Joel Embiid already guaranteed a win in this series. And then what about the Knicks? Go, your floor.
Yeah, I'm still hesitant with the Sixers. It was a big win. I keep going to, by rights, they should have won game two. The Sixers should be up 3-2 right now. And if they were, I'd be sitting confident. As I said, I think they're going to win this series. I think they're going to end up facing the Celtics in the finals. But that game and really, you know, set them back. Bogdanovich being out, I liked the trade. I liked him going there. But Miles McBride has really stepped up, and he's played well in this postseason. So I'm not that worried about Bogdanovich being out for the Knicks because McBride has played well and has picked up that slack. The Sixers, I wish I could say Embiid will be healthy at some point. He's just not. He's logging so many minutes, and you see him dragging at the end of these games. Maxey, another big game. The disappointment I've gotten from the Sixers is Tobias Harris really needs to step up. This is the three guy on that team, and he just really hasn't done anything, you know, to help lift up Maxey and support the team. You need the big three guys scoring. He's been invisible for the most part in this series. But to the Knicks, make your free throws. You had it. If you made your free throws, you win this game in regulation. You don't lose to the Sixers. And it just shows at the end of the games, when they give you those free throws, you got to knock them down.
The discussion yesterday was whether or not the Bucks will keep Doc Rivers after they obviously lose. And then they go out with an emphatic 115-92 victory in Game 5 to avoid elimination. They did so without their top two scorers. Here's one of those wacky facts I find when I'm researching to make sure I know what I'm talking about for this show. They are the first team in NBA history to win a playoff game while missing their top two scorers from the regular season. That means the Pacers still lead the series. It goes back to Indiana tomorrow night. Milwaukee coach Doc Rivers said that both Giannis and Lillard are scheduled to work out on the court during the off day today. He said, quote, I think they're very, very, very close. I don't know how much of that is hype, Steve, but if they can get any time from Giannis and Lillard of note, same question as before with whatever, I think it was hockey we're talking about, have the Bucks lit a fire? Has Doc Rivers figured it out? Do we give him a shot here to get to the next round and say, okay, hiring me wasn't a stupid idea?
You know, I look at this in last night's game. Bobby Portis Jr., 29 points. Middleton, the two guys who are there, 3 and 4, really stepped up. But if I was a Bucks fan, I would just still be so upset with Portis Jr. for getting kicked out in the first 6.5 minutes of the prior game. If he had played, scored 29 points, just does what he did last night in that game, the Bucks are on the verge of winning this series. But he let his emotions get away. If I'm Doc Rivers, I'm also – and you want the Pacers thinking, oh, Giannis is coming back, Lillard's coming back, we're going to be at full strength game 6. It'd be great to see. Lillard's going to be able to step in and play immediately because he just been out a couple of games. Giannis, though, I think won't be as bad as Embiid because he's not as big and bulky as Embiid, but it's going to take him a few games to build up that stamina, get confident with his shot again. So Giannis, if he does come back, I don't see him being as effective as he normally is. He will be, you know, at 60, maybe 70%. But if they can win the series, he'll be good to go. You know, you got to hope for the next round. Doc just trying to hold on, doing anything he can to win. He doesn't want to lose a one and done series again.
You were yesterday. You were already leaning towards that the mood in Milwaukee when everything settles down, depending on when they get knocked out, was going. And we were thinking yesterday would be, look, Doc didn't have Giannis. We're going to give him a full season to really implement his policies, and it's a one or done season next year. Would you agree, Steve, that if the Bucks come back and beat the Pacers to advance, Rivers is definitely coming back next year, regardless?
I think if they win this series, Rivers is definitely coming back regardless. Yeah. I still believe he's going to come back because it wasn't his team to start the year. It's not his coaching staff. You have to give him a fair shot. And to me, the best question is what you said yesterday. Who are you going to get that's better? If you believe you can get someone else who's going to be better than Doc Rivers at the end of the season, I can see them making that move. Because Doc Rivers isn't a long-term solution for the Bucks. He's a quick fix. He's a patch. But are you going to be able to get someone better? And right now, the way it's looking, I don't think they are. So why not give him another shot?
So we mentioned earlier the Boston Celtics' best record in the NBA. Center Kristaps Porzingis is expected. Here comes that ominous announcement from the team. He's expected to miss a, quote, minimum of several games, end quote. He got a calf strain in game 4, which we were talking about yesterday, and we were pondering, well, how serious is it? He's obviously out tonight, which we'll get to that game in a minute, but this could turn into many, many, many days. So before we get to tonight's game in general, Steve, how much does this, and I mean no pun at all, at the expense of Porzingis, how much does this hobble, does this fundamentally alter the Celtics?
It hobbles them. I don't think it fundamentally changes. And to give you an idea, and I texted you this last night, I believe, this injury to Porzingis is the same injury to Giannis of the Bucks. So we've seen Giannis be out now for, what, like a month or something like that? So it isn't Porzingis is going to be day-to-day and coming back. He's out for this series. Now, it may not be as serious as Giannis's injury, but I don't see him coming back, you know, for a week or two. The Celtics are so talented, though. I think they could still get by because you're still looking at a Sixers team that's injured with Embiid. You're looking at a Bucks team with Giannis being out. You're looking at, you know, a Knicks team that's playing well. But, you know, if they had Julius Randle right now and he was healthy, where would this Knicks team be? I mean, I think you'd be looking at them as possibly the best team in the East with Porzingis out. So they're going to want to get him back, but I'm not sure he's going to be back, you know, until like the conference finals.
Any question about tonight? Do they wrap it up against the Heat or at the Garden?
I think they wrap it up, and we're talking about the Porzingis, but you got to look at the other side of the ball. We know Jimmy Butler's out. Terry Rozier has been out for these playoffs, but Jaime Jaquez, who's, you know, another one of those key players on this team, he missed the last game. He's already ruled out for tonight's game. He did not even travel to Boston. So the Heat are down two of their top players here. You got to see Bam step up and have a really big game if the Heat are going to have any shot. Tyler Hero's got to shoot great from outside to keep the Celtics defense honest. So it's a tough road for the Heat. They're a 14-point underdog here. I could see them possibly covering. I don't really see the Heat winning this game outright.
You've been high on the Mavericks for many, many, many weeks. This has been the fun series so far. They're on the road tonight, but we know Kawhi is not playing for the Clippers. Is this the road game that Dallas steals to put them up, go back to Dallas, and win it in six?
I think I like Dallas in this spot. Right now, they're a 3-point favorite. They had these periods where, you know, in the last game, I mean, they found themselves down 31 in the second quarter. You can't do that in the playoffs. You saw them in game 1 score 8 points in the second quarter. I know Luka Doncic has a sore knee. He's been ineffective somewhat in this series. He's not 100%, but we saw Kyrie step up. I like to believe that the Mavs are going to step up in this series. I'd like to see him steal this game. Kawhi, you know, non-factor, been hurt most of this series. And the Mavs really need to steal this game and give them that shot in game 6 because I don't want to go back to L.A. for game 7.
Let's go back to yesterday. The Lakers are done. All of the focus now on LeBron, the future. What does the team do? What does he do? And I was trying to, on the air, on the fly, piece together the timing of all of this and how all this works. I did a deep dive yesterday. It's a little convoluted, and we can get into it as we get closer to the dates. But the dates all line up in that, first of all, the Lakers may not right now even have a first-round pick. But that could change by June 1st when the Pelicans, as a result of the Anthony Davis trade, have to tell the Lakers whether or not they're going to take their first-round pick this year or next year. The Lakers can then, once they know that on June 1st, these dates are important, they can start wheeling and dealing all of their first-round picks that they have. We're talking into 2029. They can start mortgaging their future so they can get into the first round. And why do they want to get into the first round? They have made no secret about the fact that they are very open. This is a quote multiple times from multiple sources within the Lakers organization in the last 48 hours. They are very open to the prospect of helping LeBron fulfill his dream of playing with his son, Bronny, by drafting him and drafting him in the first round. I started to think, well, why wouldn't another team just move up then if it's just about Bronny and then you get LeBron, which is still on the table because LeBron, because he's LeBron, has a player option in his contract that allows him to either stay with the Lakers or become a free agent and join whatever NBA team drafts his son. If the Lakers don't, LeBron, with or without that clause, has until the end of June to tell the Lakers if he's coming back. The draft is 4 days before his deadline. So, Steve, I can't find anyone that says Bronny James is NBA ready. I mean, my God, he's got 25 games under his belt for the Trojans. He had a heart attack at the age of 19. We hope to God he's okay. Is LeBron James big enough and important enough to not only the Lakers, but other teams, because they're all going to start thinking about this, that you draft a kid just to get LeBron to your team, win now, mortgage your future?
A couple of things off of that. If you're going to go that route, you have to have the cap space. You have to have the ability to fit LeBron into your roster without devastating your roster by having to let other players go. And when you see these teams, we saw it with Miami when they went and put the big three together. They had three players on the roster and basically have to fill everything else. We see it with the Suns. They have their big three, but they don't have a whole lot of supporting cast with it. So you don't want to devastate your team for that shot to get LeBron and devastate everything else just to win. The Lakers, are you going to mortgage even more of your future trading away a first-round draft pick to draft Bronny? You're not winning it right now with LeBron. Bronny's not the missing piece to win it for the Lakers. So if I'm the Lakers, my stance is I'm not drafting him. I'm not trading for him. I'm not doing anything. I hope the league has sanity and realizes no one should draft Bronny. Now Bronny becomes a free agent after the draft. He can sign with the Lakers because that's what I would do. Oh. And now I can keep LeBron on my team. I can give him that opportunity. I know I'm not winning a championship with this current roster, and I can try to figure it out from there. The wild card is any team willing to take that chance and waste a draft pick on Bronny because you're not drafting Bronny? You're taking a shot at LeBron. And right now, to me, the one team that still sticks out, we mentioned it yesterday, is Golden State. I could see the Warriors taking a second round pick and just saying, look, let's take a shot here. Let's see if we can make it work.
All right, we're going to put a pin in that, and because you went deep into this also from the Bronny perspective yesterday, which I want to touch on just a little bit. And then we got some NFL news as well coming up.
Mix Picks, the Mix Picks Sports Show.
Let's go!
So we're talking about the ongoing fun parlor game of the Lakers are out of the NBA playoffs. Yes, we're still talking about where will LeBron be? Will he stay with the Lakers? He has until June 30th to tell the Lakers whether or not he wants to renew for $51.4 million. But he doesn't have to because he also has this clause that says he can go anywhere he wants if another team drafts his son, Bronny. And of course, Steve and I, we text back and forth during the breaks. Steve's already a step ahead of me because you mentioned, okay, well, would the Warriors, like, because this is interesting. When we get to the draft, which is before June 30th, any team could be thinking, look, is it worth a first-round pick on Bronny, who's clearly not a first-round pick, to take him, get LeBron to come to our team because he wants to play with his kid? And then you brought up right before we went to break the idea of, well, what if everybody in the NBA just says, come on, he's not a first-round pick. It's not worth it. We're talking about, you know, a lot of draft, a lot of cap space, et cetera, for LeBron to come to our team. But you thought, well, wait a minute, if he's still around in the second, would the Warriors take Bronny and then go? They've already expressed an interest in LeBron. Now, before we get to the text you sent me, where you're another step ahead, you talked yesterday at length about the Bronny factor. I'm not a big fan of LeBron's. I respect the hell out of him, but I'm not a big fan of his. He rubs me the wrong way. But I will say he's a great businessman. He's an extraordinary athlete. And by all things that I see, he's a great family man. I don't think he raised an idiot. And I think Bronny, if I can see all these stories saying you ain't a first-round pick, you were talking yesterday about the shadow of being LeBron's kid to begin with. When the entire sports world is saying, hey, kid, you're only getting drafted because of your dad's name, that's not exactly how you want Bronny coming into the league. And I wonder if that also plays into the text you just sent me.
I think that's slightly a factor, and it would be interesting. To me, if I'm LeBron, I'm deciding, do I want to be a Laker or do I not? And as LeBron, I'm choosing where my next location is going to be. I'm not that worried about if Bronny gets drafted, because if a team's drafting him, they're hoping to get LeBron. And I'm not that worried about it because I want to play where I want to play. The question then becomes, you've wasted a first-round pick or even a second-round pick on Bronny to get LeBron. You don't get LeBron. How long does that team hold on to Bronny in order before you release him? If you think he can actually play, you keep him. And now Bronny has a chance to prove that he can play and deserves to be in the NBA because his father's on a different team. But if I'm LeBron, I play that game and go where I want to go. I expect whoever drafts Bronny will end up releasing him because I didn't go there. And then I just have the team that I signed with sign him, and he comes plays with me anyway. So I think LeBron needs to look at where he wants to play and understand that either Bronny's going to get his own chance and make it on his own and get rid of all the critics who say he can't play in the NBA, or he's going to ultimately end up where I want to be in the first place, because the team will end up releasing him, and then we can just pick him up that way.
See, and there's a couple of things on that scenario that I was thinking about after getting your text was, okay, well, depending on who, a lot of it would depend on who drafted him. If somebody else in the West of note drafted him, whether it's the Warriors or any other team that's up there in the echelon, right, they might keep Bronny and not cut him, just knowing what you just said. Just out of spite, if nothing else, as a protectionary note. I'm working this through as I think about it. But to your point, your bigger point, all of the indications are from people that we know LeBron. Not like, you know, sources say. I'm talking about guys like Michael Wilbon of ESPN and others who know LeBron. They hang out with him. Say that he loves L.A. Like, he loves living there. You know he wants to be what Kobe wanted to be in terms of he's already, you know, done the Space Jam movie. He wants to do LeBron productions and all of that. He's got three kids. They're all in school systems, et cetera, which is why I always pondered why he didn't approve the Warriors trade, because big deal. San Francisco to L.A., when you're a near billionaire, you can make that work sort of thing. But to the idea that you keep saying of where do I want to be, LeBron wants to be in L.A., and he wants to play with his kid.
Does he want to win championships? Because currently this team's not going to be. And LeBron, as much as all that sounds good, LeBron is still fighting the Michael Jordan and I'm the greatest player of all time and I need to win more championships and I can't just be a one and done in the playoffs. And that to me is still a driving. He's running out of time. Mm-hmm. How important is winning a championship to him?
And that was the argument I heard made against all of this yesterday was LeBron wants to be the only player in history to win four titles with four different teams. Because again, scuttlebutt, people that know what they think they know. That LeBron believes he is or should be in that GOAT argument. And what if I do something that Michael never did? Michael didn't win one with the Wizards, so he didn't even win with two teams. I've done it with four. So I don't know. This is the fun part of sports in general in the next month.
And this is what makes him such a great athlete, that desire to compete at that level. You see it from all of them. I mean, Michael Jordan was not a great teammate by any means, and ask anyone, because they have that drive that goes so far beyond. And LeBron has it too, that competitiveness to be the greatest.
Let me just throw in a couple quick NFL notes that I alluded to. The Broncos, they got Zach Wilson in a trade last week. If that name sounds familiar, for those of you that are football fans, he was the number two pick of the 2021 draft. He went to the Jets. That didn't go well. Thursday, a week ago, the Broncos got Bo Nix out of Oregon in the first round of the NFL draft. And the Broncos, this is a very interesting move, and they did it for money reasons. They have informed Wilson and his reps they'll not be picking up his fifth-year option in his contract. So Zach Wilson is basically a lame duck in Denver. If he gets a shot to play, he's got to do something. He's got to show something because he'll be a free agent. He's on the same team with Bo Nix and Jarrett Stidham. Now, Broncos coach Sean Payton says they're all going to compete for the job. I just have a hard time believing that, but I don't know how you see the chess pieces here, because Sean Payton to me is the kind of guy that would throw – everything we've heard is he loves Bo Nix. Remember, this is a guy he wanted from the very beginning. Does he throw Bo Nix out and say, here, pull the Troy Aikman. I'll do with everything I can. Or does he protect Bo Nix, has Zach Wilson play a few games, and then throws Bo Nix out there? I mean, Zach Wilson, I don't know how devastated you are or aren't over this whole thing. I don't even know what a factor Stidham might be. He did finish the last two games. How do you see it playing out?
I think, one, it was a given he was not going to have his fifth-year option picked up, because I think it's at $22.5 million.
Correct.
And you're not going to pay $22.5 million to your backup. They brought in Zach Wilson to compete with Stidham for the backup job. Come on, let's prove it. Let's see if you can beat out Stidham. If they can't, they let him go. No harm, no foul. They got to test drive him and see what it is. I think either Stidham or Zach Wilson will start the season. I think Bo Nix will sit at the beginning, but I do think, depending on what their schedule looks like, I do think early on in the season, again, week five, week six, that we will see Bo Nix starting quarterback for this team. Sean Payton runs such a complex offense that I have a hard time believing Nix is ready to go week one, but they're going to throw everything at him, and as soon as he's ready, they will put him out there.
Which, by the way, that was one of those stories that has been reverberated and regurgitated over and over again about the very day after Sean Payton met Bo Nix and he worked out for the team, the next morning, and no one's denied this anywhere, Bo Nix had the entire offense down, quote, quote, whatever, to whatever level Sean Payton had taught him on that day. He walks in at 8:30 in the morning or whatever on a Saturday, if I remember the story correctly, and Payton was blown away that he understood everything. He was repeating the plays. He didn't need the card on his wrist, et cetera. And that was like the final thing. Payton went to bed Friday night going, I love this kid. He went to bed Saturday morning going, I want this kid.
And think about what you just said. Russell Wilson, considered one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, could not pick up Sean Payton's offense. It's where that divide between the two came from. He didn't get it. He didn't understand it. He didn't follow it. And Payton had to dumb the offense down for Russell Wilson. And that's not Sean Payton. So think about that. An NFL established veteran couldn't pick it up, and you're telling me Bo Nix did it basically overnight? If that's the case, Bo Nix might be really good quarterback in this Broncos offense.
By the way, we're into May, because NFL, it's a 12-month sport in America. So we are only 8 days away. It is a week from tomorrow when we get the official schedule. We already know the teams everybody's going to be playing, but we get that fun day. So we know that Friday the 10th, that's what our show will be. Going over the schedule of every team in the NFL and who's going to play where and figuring out when Bo Nix is going to play and other things like that. We will take a 23-hour break and be back tomorrow. Have a great night, Steve.
Thank you.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
Little roller up along first. Behind the back.